Mini episode 736 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome. FDH Lounge mini episode number 736. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris here on the show where nothing is off topic. But if you go back over the course of time, one of the topics that we have covered the most, certainly the overall rubric of sports, and within that, baseball. That has always been a very dominant topic of conversation on this show amidst the vast clutter of conversational topics that we've had over a period of time. We have on a gentleman today who is the baseball insider on NBC Sports Radio. Broader than that, though, this is a guy that I have heard for many years on the radio, different forms of syndication, whether it be Sirius XM radio. This is a guy that you always hear on there talking baseball, occasionally hosting some shows across sports, but that's one of the constants in this ever-changing broadcast landscape is that this guy is always out there somewhere talking about the game of baseball. It will be nice to be in a two-way discussion with him today as opposed to the many times, as I say, that I've heard him on the radio. He is also a broadcaster with Entercom. And additionally, previously, I don't know if he overlapped with my good friend Joe Stazek. I know he was on air at 97.5 The Fan in Philadelphia, where, of course, my good buddy Joe had taken up residence all these years. But again, a real pleasure to get this guy on the show, somebody very knowledgeable about the landscape of Major League Baseball, and we'll be breaking it down here at the midway point of the 2016 campaign. I speak, of course, of Seth Everett of NBC Sports Radio. Seth, welcome to the FDH Lounge today, sir. Pleasure to have you on. How are you?
Hey, that's a great introduction, and I take great pride in introductions, so I really appreciate that, man. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Well, again, it's been a pleasure to
I'm a better introduction. I'm a better introduction person than an interviewer, so I really appreciate that.
Well, you know, I take a lot of pride in the intros. I try to put people over strong,
yes.
And
it's important. It sets the conversation off on a good note.
Yeah, it's never failed, I'll tell you that, and I don't expect it will in this instance. As I say, I've enjoyed listening to you over a period of time, and again, you're always popping up somewhere to talk baseball, no matter which station I change it to, and that's always a constant, so it's nice to be the guy breaking it down with you today. At the All-Star break here, first let's take a look at the All-Star game itself. In many ways, you could say kind of a microcosm of the last three seasons when you look at the dominant young talent that's been coming into the game, really kind of a breakthrough night for Chris Bryant on the national stage, another big night for the Kansas City Royals, who have been the story of baseball the last 2.5 years, among other things. So what were some of your big takeaways from this year's midseason classic?
You know, it was a game that was a regular baseball game. There was nothing flashy about it. It was, I wouldn't call it dull. I like the stars. You know, I like seeing all the different players. I love the statistic where, you know, 26 of the All-Stars were 27 years of older or younger, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was neat. You know, there are a lot of young stars, and I think baseball's in very good hands. I will say, disconcerting thing about the All-Star game is the home field advantage in the World Series. I hate it. I have grown such a disdain for it. I never liked it. And I was there in 2002. I was working for MLB at the time, and I know how baseball's thinking was, but I just think it's so disconcerting to put a game that really should just be a lot of fun and put a value to it that is really valuable. You know, 6 of the last 7 World Series have been won by teams that had home field advantage. And, you know, you want to go further, if you go back 30 years, over 70% of teams that had home field advantage win the World Series. I mean, we're talking about a commodity that is very big, and it should not be diminished. Things that I like that should have no place in a game that counts is fan voting, I wouldn't get all these players involved. I would change the way the All-Star game is played, and they're not. They're doing the regular All-Star game, but then putting this value behind it. And I find the conflict to be disconcerting, not only to myself, but also to the fan base. I got in trouble. I'll tell you a quick story. I got in trouble at Fox Sports when I was there because I made this comment. And I said, forget ratings points, forget market share, forget, demographics. Find me a person, just a person, that has said, I wasn't going to watch the All-Star game, but because of home field advantage, I am tuning in. Because if you find that one guy, I'd like to understand that mentality. Fox claims they like it. And I thought really disconcerting was the way some of their broadcasters were talking about it. It was clear. I've been on that side. So I just know when directors are telling you to pimp something that you need to pimp. And they were talking about it like, I don't need Frank Thomas to tell me he thinks the All-Star game is great because home field advantage is at stake. That's a bold-faced lie. There's not a player who agrees with that. And because of that, I find that the whole thing seemed very disingenuous.
Those are very good points. And given that this is Fox that we're talking about, perhaps we could make the analogy and say that home field advantage is sort of the glow puck of baseball for them. You know, it's a gimmick that they have that people can kind of sink their teeth into. But I agree with you on the completely intellectual level of what's best for the game. What's kind of interesting about that in terms of my own perspective is what's good for baseball is sort of different in this regard in terms of what's good for my Cleveland Indians, just like right now the landscape of the NBA, what's good for my Cavaliers is not necessarily good for the NBA. But I can agree with you. It's not very good that this would go to an American League team automatically because of this. And I think that anybody would be hard-pressed to differ with you on that point.
Well, it seems like the sentiment is growing. You know, I could see – I'll pitch this right now. You know, Bryce Harper's been campaigning for make baseball fun again. Okay, great. How about make the All-Star game fun again and just play it for fun and do everything that's fun? And I don't think anybody would have an issue. I think, it only trends on Twitter because it's the only thing going on in sports. And baseball has an issue where they don't trend on Twitter all the time. Baseball has to do a lot to trend on Twitter, whereas the NBA, all they have to do is put on a uniform and they trend on Twitter. And, my only issue, I don't want to get into a whole basketball issue, thing, but I've done tons of shows on this. My only argument is I want it to be that there are more than two teams that have a shot at the title. I was talking to an electrician the other day. He's excited about Derrick Rose coming to the Knicks. And my response was, I said, so what does that turn into? Oh, they're a playoff team? They're a sixth seed? Okay. I mean, if that's the goal – I'll say this about baseball, and baseball has its warts. I mean, you brought them up before I came on, and, baseball has legitimate warts, but there are probably, and this is off the top of my head, probably 14 teams that are literally saying to their fan bases right now, we can win the World Series. And that's healthy. That's not only do you have all these division winners, you have division leaders. You have teams that are not winning divisions that are literally saying, just get us in. We have what it takes. That's healthy. That's called competitive balance, and that's something that baseball needs to pump its chest out more. And I think that that's where this whole thing gets all convoluted. It's a great commercial for baseball. That's all this whole week is, and it's great for the host city. So service those things and focus on pennant races. I didn't think there was nearly enough talk about division races. And I would be very interested to see. I would love to get John Smoltz to tell me who he thinks is better, Washington or San Francisco. If the Cubs are the best team in the National League, who's the second best? And tell me why. And that's the pennant races are something that baseball has that they do not sell. And I think it's a missed opportunity. There are a couple statistics. I can give you two statistics that when you hear them, you'll say, why didn't I know this prior? And I'm not apologizing. This is more for your audience. You might know this already. But the two statistics are, number one, do you know that last year 20 out of 30 teams set local television ratings records?
Wow.
People think the only people that watch sports watch the NFL. these teams are doing well. Your Indians,
right.
I think, were one of them. And
yeah.
while there are mixed attendances, television ratings, sports ratings is what is keeping cable companies alive. And yet here they are. The people are watching baseball. That's remarkable. The other statistic is an iTunes thing, which is the number one downloaded app in iTunes history is the MLB At Bat app. That's not an NFL app. That's not an NBA app. It's the MLB At Bat app. Now, I don't understand how we played an All-Star game and those two statistics didn't come to the forefront. But rather, we'll talk about how Terry Collins didn't use the Mets in a game that counts.
Should have been mentioned. Absolutely should have been mentioned. I got a weird stat for you, too. And this is, again, it's kind of an oddity for the World Series to end in four or five games. Doesn't it necessarily happen that often, last year notwithstanding. But
when it happens, it's when it happens, it's very forgettable.
This won't be, though. I guarantee you this won't be. If San Francisco wins the World Series in four or five games, it will of necessity be at home. All four major sports will end their seasons in the Bay Area this year.
In the Bay Area. I saw that. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I talk to guys. There's a radio station that I contribute to out there, and I always laugh. I tell those guys, are you pinching yourselves? You really should not cash paychecks because, I mean, to talk about sports in this light, and their football teams stink, and nobody knows. Nobody cares. It's amazing. You know, in Boston right now, Tom Brady's deflate hearing is still the lead story. The Red Sox are in second place. They're two games out. But yet in San Francisco, nobody even recognizes what the Niners are doing.
Yeah, yeah, and that's probably for the best for the Niners organization right now. But
right.
That's a very good point, you know, and that's the way that the landscape is with these different cities. Before we get to looking at the leagues themselves, I want to ask you one more question.
I'll give you one other funny anecdote.
Yeah, what you got?
2 weeks ago, the A's played the Giants, and I said that is literally the greatest success up against the ultimate failure. And it's amazing that San Francisco right now is the healthiest baseball franchise in the league. They sell out every game. Television ratings through the roof. Their games have become events, and their downtown around their ballpark is thriving. Oakland is a legitimate cesspool. They have plumbing issues. They have raw sewage coming up through the pipes. That place needs to be imploded. And the A's can't get out of there fast enough. The Giants are blocking them. It's like the big, tall, tough guy just beating on his little stepbrother. It's amazing to me how, you know, literally, like, if Hunter Pence gets a single and he goes on first base and the first baseman's holding him on, does Hunter Pence say, man, does it stink in your ballpark?
That's a very good point. And I'll tell you what, another one that I will make, as I have made previously on this show to my good friend Ray Flowers from SiriusXM, who himself is a Bay Area guy, you know, and he agreed with me on this. Brian Sabian's greatest accomplishment as general manager, especially in the earlier times of this run, is overcoming Brian Sabian, the accountant. Because you look at them winning the World Series with the likes of, like, the Barry Zito salary and some of the other things. I mean, isn't that just absolutely remarkable for a team to go on a roll like this when they've had the number of inefficient salaries that they have, particularly earlier in their run?
They recovered from the bonds controversy. I mean, I think that's a testament. The golden era in that franchise started when Barry Bonds left. And Barry Bonds is the greatest hitter of yours and my lifetime. I mean, it's amazing that, you know, we have to acknowledge those things. I'm not discounting what Barry Bonds did, you know, as far as steroids are concerned, but he is the single greatest hitter that I've ever seen in my life, you know, seen live. And they had a big controversy around him where he was testifying before a grand jury, and now their golden era begins. It's remarkable. Sabian is remarkable. You're a Cleveland fan, so do you want my Cleveland Indians joke?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so the Cavaliers win the championship. They have a parade. They have 1.3 million people go into downtown Cleveland. Now, if you've been to downtown Cleveland, you know the area is not a huge town. So you can't really go to downtown Cleveland and not see the ballpark. That night, the Indians played a home game and got 15,000 people in their stadium. That means 1.29 million people walked by Progressive Field and said, eh, I'll do something else.
One of my friends and show contributors was there that night, and he was telling me what it was like and how surreal it was, albeit he was recounting the night through a drunken haze, but he was able to remember that much. Yeah,
Cavaliers after party. Call the Cavaliers after party and let everybody come for $5.
They had a street team out there. I give them credit. They were selling tickets everywhere for $16 throughout the park. They had a street team. They were working it. I got to give them credit. I got an Indians question I want to ask you in a little bit here, as they are one of the big stories about the American League. A couple big picture things I want to ask you first.
Sure.
One is just overall big picture about the state of the game, because you mentioned Barry Bonds and the greatest player in our lifetime and the guy who probably in very, very short order, once he racks up another couple of seasons, who I would think is going to take that baton from him is Mike Trout. And I want to ask you this because this is a question that keeps kind of coming to my mind. I look at somebody like my dad, who is the epitome of like the very, very casual sports fan. Mm-hmm. Why is it that the players of today are so invisible to the mainstream, to guys like my dad, who might not know Mike Trout if he bit him, versus, again, Barry Bonds, Junior Griffey, even like Greg Maddux, Frank Thomas? What is it about today and about this landscape where we have this explosion of these great stars, and I would argue to you, many of them better than the names I just put out there to you, with the possible exception of Greg Maddux, but what is it? Where is baseball falling down in this regard?
Well, you know, given the statistics, the numbers that I gave you about local television ratings, it's actually not falling at all.
Okay.
I think what's happened is it's a microcosm of the way the sports media is being portrayed. Not to get too, you know, under the hood, but I find that everything has become so compartmentalized. For example, on sports radio, networks will tell you not to talk hockey. That's amazing because
right.
we remember in the 80s and 90s, you know, the Flyers and the Islanders and you know, like I remember these great, you know, the Edmonton Oilers great run in the 80s and Mark Messier, Wayne Gretzky, and then when they all went to New York and the Rangers won the Stanley Cup, like that's a sport you're not telling me to talk about. I have seen, and I'm not throwing any one network under the bus, but I have seen networks that have told their audiences, don't talk more baseball. I have found that I have been, you know, I've seen hosts criticized for having me on too long because it was too much baseball and it's too much of not Tom Brady talk. It's pretty remarkable the way that mentality has gone, and I think it's more about perception. Mike Trout's an interesting case. He's burst onto the scene, and he's playing his games in the middle of the night on the East Coast, and the team has just floundered in an era where competitive balance is pretty good. I mean, teams are – most seasons are very, very competitive, and they haven't been a part of any of it. Bryce Harper has gotten a lot of press, and I think that he has become the new face of baseball. But, you know, a perfect example is my two favorite players, which is Giancarlo Stanton and Jose Fernandez. And there's nobody who watches their games. I mean, Jose Fernandez is a guy that I will set my DVR to make sure I see start. I mean, he is the most electric starter in the game. And that's a game that includes Clayton Kershaw and Jake Arrieta. I'm not discounting those guys. But the one, if you're asking me as a fan, who would I want to see, it's Jose Fernandez. And as far as most intimidating home run hitters since Barry Bonds, it's Giancarlo Stanton. And I love that he's hitting .225 and people in Miami are blaming Barry Bonds, who's their hitting coach. It all comes full circle.
It does. It does. But that's the thing, you know, and just with you mentioning hockey, that kind of puts me in mind of another conversation that I had, my good friend Russ Cohen from Sportsology, who has said that he doesn't care if hockey's out of the Olympics, that, hey, we got the World Cup this fall. And I said to him, Russ, I love the World Cup. That's going to be awesome. But I said to him, I said, you're in the hockey bubble, my friend. I said, my friends won't be talking to me about that. I live in an area that's not wild about hockey. My friends around here talk to me about hockey during the Olympics when the NHL guys are playing. Not one of them, I think, is going to say to me, hey, did you see what happened in the World Cup game last night? So is baseball just sort of getting to be in its own kind of silo here to where these names just aren't penetrating the mainstream as much, no matter how great they are?
Well, there's something to be said for it, because the argument, in my estimation, is hockey has certain things. Hockey plays to 93% capacity.
Mm-hmm.
What other sport can claim that? I mean, it's certainly not the NBA. And hockey has the highest time spent viewing, which is a neat statistic that really is used by a lot of advertisers. Which is, they might not have the greatest numbers, but they have the most loyal. And I think the biggest mistake that is made, and that's why the future of podcasts is fascinating, and that's why Blog Talk Radio is doing so well, is part of it is becoming, I want to hear segregated conversation. I don't want to talk about the NHL. I want to talk about my Flyers. I want to talk about my Blue Jackets. And that needs to happen. And as far as baseball is concerned, I think they fall in that same trap. I used to host shows where, the whole idea was to cover 30 teams. And I don't know that I was servicing the audience when I'm talking Red Sox and you're an Astros fan. I don't know that you're helping. I found that in college football. For example, in college football, it is impossible to talk national championship. That's not a conversation, because if you're in Arkansas, you don't care about the Pac-12. And you don't care what Oregon does. And you care about your region. Florida is interested in playing Florida State. And when you're talking about that game, you're ignoring Michigan-Ohio State. And that's why I believe in the future of podcasts, because I'd like to get into my car, and if I'm a sports fan, I want to select my team and listen to content about that.
Absolutely, and I completely agree with what you're thinking about where the broadcast industry is going, because, yes, it is getting towards, servicing people where they live, so to speak, and, that's really the direction of everything, and, again, I would agree with you that I think it's a healthy direction. The other big picture thing I wanted to ask you about, and I guess you sort of went there a little bit already in talking about Giancarlo Stanton, low batting average but a high home run total. This thing this year in baseball, this odd kind of overall dynamic where offense isn't necessarily up appreciably, at least depending on how you define it, but the home runs are. Home runs as a share of offensive total, way up. But again, it's still more towards the three true outcomes. A lot of strikeouts, those continuing to trend up as they have in recent years. So in looking at this, what in your mind kind of accounts for the spike this year in home runs? Is it just one of these fluky things that's going to go away because it really doesn't fit in with the fabric of patterns from the last couple of years, or do you think it might be indicative of a broader trend?
Well, I think it's more of a change in philosophy. The reason is because I get the sense that it is no longer embarrassing to strike out. And we used to hear a phrase when we were growing up playing Little League, protect the plate. And that meant when you got two strikes, you changed your mechanics to just make contact. The best hitter I ever saw do that was Edgar Martinez. And the idea is now you're telling sluggers to just do your thing. And that if you strike out, that's okay because you're also going to hit more home runs. So the home runs are up, but the strikeouts are up. And the innings are boring. And the rallies are few and far between. And while there is offensive numbers that will say, well, there's offense, coming out, and, runs are getting scored, I don't think the game is as exciting as it has been. And I think that that's part of it. And it's hard to argue this fact because, you don't have the statistics to bring it up. The two things I would do is start teaching protecting the plate, and the second thing would be outlaw the shift. I think the shift is idiotic, and I think that there's no strategy in breaking it, because you're not paying these sluggers to go hit little dribblers down the opposite field. You want them to drive the ball. And if they do, you should be rewarded with base hits. And that will perpetuate rallies. And what happens to me is an inning takes forever when there's a 9-pitch at bat and it turns into a walk. You have seven throws over because the guy's trying to steal second. He steals second, but then the guy hits a single, so now it's first and third. Eventually, you get to bases loaded, and by the time you have bases loaded, there's been two strikeouts, so no runners are ever advancing. And now on the final hitter, they put that Fakakta shift on, and now all of a sudden the guy hits a bullet to right field, but it turns into a 4-3. And that's not healthy. That's not entertainment. And what I would do is I would draw a line, an imaginary line, from the point of home plate to straightaway center field, and I would say before the pitch is thrown, the first baseman, the second baseman, the right fielder can't cross it. The shortstop, the third baseman, the left fielder can't cross it. And then you'll see some of these 230 averages go to 250, and now all of a sudden that's your missing offense.
Very interesting. I hadn't heard it quite put that way before. I got to give you credit in terms of incentives, disincentives with the shift, and as far as going for more power and just sort of swinging from the heels. But that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I got to give you a lot of credit there. That really is very, very logical, I think, if anybody's looking for a way to try to get at that. In looking specifically at the American League, as I promised, a question about my Cleveland Indians. And again, I say this as somebody who has been sort of a bitter fan for a number of years now about this ownership and about, again, the pattern of doing it on the cheap and, you know, basically trying to do the something for nothing thing offensively. Well, thanks to the wizardry of Terry Francona and guys like Rajay Davis finding the fountain of youth, I mean, thus far, this whole house of cards, you know, notwithstanding not having a lot of power in the year of the home run, they've been managing to scratch out a lot of runs, a lot of offense. But again, you look at it, and for somebody like me that's been sitting here for years crying out for the unicorn of the right-hand power bat to try to make a difference in this lineup, what do you think when you see this? Because it reminds me an awful lot of where the Mets were before they got Cespedes last year in terms of the starting pitching but being one piece away. Am I just the hometown pessimist looking at this saying that Cinderella is going to turn into a pumpkin here at midnight, or do you think something like this is sustainable throughout the course of the year and having the outstanding starting pitching to back it up?
Well, if they stay the course, I mean, I think what Terry's done is he's given a swagger to the Indians that they haven't had in a long time. Lindor is a good example of it. Kipnis is a good example. It's just guys that you're seeing strut their stuff a little more than I'm used to seeing from that Indian squad. You know, there's no secret that their pitching is going to anchor them. I mean, that's the worst-kept secret in baseball. I think the neat thing that has happened with the Indians, and, you know, I think part of this is what happened last year. Last year, for the Royals to win the division, all they had to literally do was show up. And that wasn't right. Nobody put up a fight. And they weren't battle-tested until the Astros series, and they just escaped the Astros series. I always said that, you know, I'd love to see the Royals get a challenger, and that's what the Indians have presented. Both teams are flawed. There's no secret. You know, you're not wrong in saying that, but I think it's too much to say it's a house of cards. When you look at the other teams in that division, you know, I can see the Royals making a run. I had made the claim on the 4th of July that I thought four of the six divisions were decided, all three NL divisions and the AL West. And I, at the time, I thought it was a three-game lead. And now it's a six-and-a-half-game lead. So I still think the Royals can be heard from. The Tigers, maybe. I doubt it. I don't believe in the White Sox. I think the Indians have a fight on their hand, and it's going to be how well they can take a punch. And, you know, that remains to be seen. I feel much more confident about the Indians than I do the Orioles. I think the Orioles,
sure,
we want to talk about house of cards. They have Ubaldo Jimenez and Yovani Gallardo in their rotation. They're a mess. You know, if they don't hit, which you don't hit in the postseason, if they don't hit, they're done. And it has to kill Buck Showalter because he's so much smarter than that. You know, Buck Showalter once told me, because I used to work with him, and he once told to me the ideal rotation is all twos, all threes, no ones, no fives, meaning – you have a quality starter every time out, no aces, but no weak links. And it's a great mentality. And if you look at the Orioles team, for example, in 2014 that went to the playoffs, they really were that. If they had a one-game playoff, they wouldn't care who started it. They would start whoever's turn it was. Well, now they have weak links in their rotation, and they need to fortify that because I think they are on the verge. I think Toronto is going to be heard from. Boston's going to be heard from. But I think Toronto's ultimately the best team in that division.
You know what's interesting? You get into word association when you say certain things there. First thing that popped into my mind when you were talking about that kind of a rotation, because the guy at the top of it, no offense to him, but I always thought he was too pitch to contact to be considered a true ace. First thing I thought of was the 05 White Sox. Is that the kind of staff you're thinking of when you hear that kind of a description?
Well, you know, I think that what happens when you see these teams is here's a great piece of advice that I learned. At this point in the season, we're not at this point yet, but at this point in the season, you don't have to be good. You just have to win. And that's a really true statement. I think it's a really interesting idea that we start to worry less and less about how good these teams are and start to realize just where they are in the standings and how much time there is left.
Well, exactly. But expectations always kind of color how we come into this year, which to me has sort of been the story of the National League this year, because you have the Cubs, who to me, and again, notwithstanding the recent downturn, the thing that's been most surprising to me is they've been as dominant as everybody thought. Myself and everybody, including their grandmother, picked them to win the World Series.
Yeah, not the
this
last
year,
three
and
weeks,
they,
though.
Yeah, they've had a downturn recently. You could almost say they were due for it, starting off as hot as they were, but they lived up to the expectations. You've had the Washington Nationals, which when I say the Cubs are surprising to me, it's because of the recent example of the Nationals always being the chalk coming into the season and things not going their way, except this year, maybe with a little bit slightly lower expectations, they've come out very strong. And then you got the Giants. I mean, if it's an even-numbered year, it must be the Giants dominating in the National League West. So
yeah. When
you look at those three, and you got to think there's a monstrous chance that the World Series team in the National League, the pennant winner, comes out of those three. I guess the Mets, with their pitching, you can never count them out in the playoffs, as we saw last year. But what do you think when you look at those three teams?
Well, the Cubs are easily the most talented, and they're probably still the best team in the sport. They have really come into their own, where they have a stretch, and they had this in the NLCS last year, where they stop playing Cubs baseball. They start making ridiculous mistakes that they are their own worst enemy. And I'm not trying to take the Mets' wins away. I know a lot of people on Twitter always yell at me about that. I'm not some disgruntled ex-Mets employee. my attitude is, you know, give the Mets credit for capitalizing, but if the Cubs had played their game, they win the world. They go to the World Series. And they didn't, and they are their own worst enemy. And, you know, I thought at the beginning of June, a lot of people had said, how do they stay motivated for this long? Because really what they have to do is right a wrong. They have to right the NLCS of last year, and they can't push time forward. Like I said, any Cubs news would ever be bad news. It's just nothing is good happening from them. So my attitude on them has been, I genuinely think that the team, they need to just light a fire, and Joe Maddon's the guy to do it. I think they could fortify their bullpen. Andrew Miller is perfect for them. Go out, make some kind of a deal, fortify the team, and go out and win a pennant. And, you know, as far as the Nationals are concerned, I'm a huge proponent of Dusty Baker. Dusty, you know, I consider him a dear friend, and Dusty gave the eulogy at my best friend's funeral, so I'm a little biased when it comes to Dusty Baker, but, you know, I think that the positive influence that he will have on a team, he wins everywhere he goes. And, you know, I already mentioned the Giants are just the class of baseball right now. So I think from all those three, I think it's a great matchup. And, you know, trust me, I think the National League playoffs could be everything you hope it would be.
You got to think so. And you got to think that it comes from those three teams. Again, when you're talking expectations, the other team that was left out of the discussion that I just put out there, the L.A. Dodgers. When you come in with the monstrous payroll, when you're the Mac Daddy in that regard, there are a lot of expectations that go with it. There is, again, as we saw in a lot of years with the Yankees, particularly those fallow years in the mid-2000s, there's a lot of inefficient money with the Dodgers. They are clearly proving that money does not equal talent, particularly when you look at a rookie, Corey Seager, arguably being the best among them. So they're at kind of a weird place right now, a team that may not even make the playoffs, obviously. So what do you think when you look at that team these days?
Well, I think Don Mattingly is loving every second of it. that's what I think. They didn't really replace Zach Greinke. I mean, that's pretty evident that they did that. And, you know, unfortunately for the Dodgers, you know, it's a good team. It's just not a great team. And, you know, the team in their division is a great team. And Yasiel Puig still is a troublesome player because, you know, he's a great natural ability, but he doesn't get any better. He doesn't improve. He doesn't learn. You know, when he first came up in the scene, and a lot of people compared him to Vlad Guerrero, but Vlad Guerrero taught himself how to hit, and Puig doesn't do that. You know, it's amazing. It's like he's not listening. I don't know. I don't know him, so I don't really want to say. But it's just amazing how that, you know, he seems to be a microcosm of that ball club.
That does seem like informed speculation based on how much we've heard coming out of there and how much you've even done on the record with various folks. Oh, yeah, exactly. Where there's smoke, there's fire. You know, there have been a lot of people saying what you just said, and it's very interesting. Thoughts for the World Series then? Any you got to like, obviously, my Indians possibly coming out of the American League with the pitching. What do you think there, and what do you think, just to wrap it up here, nationally, who do you think might be most likely coming out of there?
Oh, you're funny. I don't do World Series. I love predicting. I think it's a statement, really. Love predicting the seasons. I just don't think anybody puts into proper realistic context how much of a crapshoot that five-game series is. And very rarely does the best team win. And so getting in, it's a very NCAA tournament mentality. And I think that five-game series, besides the fact that you have wild card games, but I think that five-game series, I would say this. If the Cubs really do finish with the best record, and then the Giants and the Nationals play each other, I think Giants-Nationals could be the single greatest series, that five-game series we've seen. It has that kind of potential. And as far as the American League is concerned, I just think there are too many, you know, variables. To pick one of those teams to not only make it into the playoffs, but then win the five-game series and then go out and win a seven-game series, now your guess is as good as mine. I'd do this show from Vegas if I were you.
Absolutely. I just, in my case, I tend to look at depth of top-end pitching. You look at how the Mets were able to make it look last year. That's, I think, the scenario the Indians are looking at, and what would make me hopeful personally is just being able to run guy after guy after guy out there. But your point is very well taken. It's a crapshoot. We'll see how it plays out. We've seen a lot of unlikelihoods with guys getting lit up in the postseason, so will be fascinating to see how it goes. But as I knew it would be, a tremendous conversation with you, Seth Everett. Thank you so much for making time for us today. Please don't be a stranger. This was a real pleasure for us.
Oh, my pleasure. Anytime I can, I would love to do it. It's an insightful conversation. And, you know, to tell you the truth, that's the future of the spoken word. I just think intelligent talk, that's why we do what we do. And I really appreciate this conversation. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much. The pleasure is all mine. And, again, look forward to doing it again with you here sometime at your availability. Thank you so much. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 736.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.